On this week's post-Super Bowl 52 Adam Schefter podcast, we're going to sit down with a man who got two rings in one weekend, the former Eagles nine-time Pro Bowl safety who now serves as the team's executive of football operations for player development, Brian Dawkins. Who had a better weekend than him? And we're going to sit down with the Eagles owner, Jeffrey Lurie, and talk about the people who shaped his life and put him in a position to be where he is today. Brian Dawkins, Jeffrey Lurie, a post-Super Bowl 52 Adam Schefter podcast. B-Daw, to get you on a day like this with everything going on is an honor.
There's nothing really going on for me.
Is that right? It's quiet?
I'm a quiet man, brother. I try to spend as much time with the family as possible.
B-Daw, how would you describe what has transpired in your life over the past 72, 96 hours?
Wow. It's unbelievable. It's something that you know, you can't really think about. I mean, you don't dream about it. Like, if an individual growing up said that, you know, I would love to be in the Hall of Fame, it would be the Hall of Fame. If that same individual had another dream and said, you know, I want to be a Super Bowl champion, it would be, okay, in 1 year, hopefully I'll have a chance to play in the Super Bowl and win it. But for an individual to be blessed to have been, you know, voted into the Hall of Fame and then have the team that he's, you know, been blessed to not only play for, but be an executive for, to be able to mentor and to help along the way this season, I mean, it's a tremendous, tremendous blessing. So I'm so humbled by it, so humbled by it.
What was Saturday like for you waiting and getting the announcement?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, I had my family there. You know, we were just messing around watching movies, I believe, at the time. And, you know, when that time came around, everybody picked up their different devices, you know, their phones and the iPad, and they filmed me as I received the phone call. And it was just a moment of joy for me. You know, it really was. Last year, you know, Adam, when I went through the process last year and did not make it, a lot of things had to be revealed to me. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I've noticed throughout my life is through pain, you know, I've gained a lot more about who I really am. And I've grown through a lot of pain. And that's just not me. I believe we all do that. We all grow more when we go through pain. We don't like the pain, but the pain has to bring things out of us. So it brought some things to the surface for me that needed to be brought out, I believe. And so this year I was able to enjoy it more than I believe I would have last year.
What was brought to the surface? What did you learn about yourself? What was revealed?
Well, there was some selfishness that was in there. You know, I consider myself to be a humble individual. And, you know, I think it was brought out a little bit that, you know, I was a humble individual as long as success was happening sometimes. And that's not the humble that the Lord has me to walk in. He wanted to be humble regardless. If win, lose, draw, whatever the case may be, that, you know, I'm going to be humble and I'm going to enjoy whatever process that I'm in. Because like I mentioned, in the midst of the pain, I know that I'm gaining something out of it. So I need to be joyous in all of those. That's actual scripture as well.
Have you thought about who your presenter is going to be, Brian?
I've thought about it. I have not announced that yet. I have not told that individual yet, but I've been praying about it and thinking about the individual that's going to do that.
Now, you mentioned working as an executive for the Eagles now, and for people who don't know, you're an executive of football operations for player development. You were on the field Sunday, and I asked what was going through your mind, and you know, could you say something to the team, and you said they don't want to hear what I would have to say. Why was that? Because I would think everybody always wants to hear what Brian Dawkins has to say.
Well, because the moment, this whole year has been about them. And so that's one of the reasons that, you know, I've tried my best to stay out of the limelight as much as possible as I work with this team. Mm-hmm. I want everything to be about these young men. You know, the things that I'm blessed to have conversations with them, that's between me and them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted it to be about them experiencing growth along the way, not just the end result of the Super Bowl, but growth and, you know, and the joy then obviously of winning the Super Bowl. But I wanted the eyes to be on them. I really did.
What impressed you most about Sunday? What will stay with you?
The thing that will stay the most with me about this team is that this is a team. It really is. Mm-hmm. Every team says family at the end of breaks. Every team talks about having, you know, their brother's back. Every team pretty much has the same mantra, you know what, next man up. But this team epitomizes all of those things because of the fact that one guy after another went down. And then the guy that stepped in, and I'm going to say guy right now, but I'll tell you his name, but the guy that stepped in for the potential MVP of the league was thought of to be a journeyman. You know, he's just, you know, he's a quarterback, but he's okay.
Correct.
But that individual then stepped up through three games in the playoffs to play some of the best football that have ever been played in the playoffs by an individual in three games. And I'm talking about Nick Foles. To see his story, to see where he's, you know, where he's come from and almost retiring and coming back and giving it another shot. You know, the Lord, you know, putting it on his heart to give it another shot, and to see the way he played, to see how confident and comfortable he had become in these playoff runs, especially in the Super Bowl, to be going against probably the best quarterback of all time in Tom Brady, and not batting an eye, because it was not about him being Tom. It was about Nick and how much he believed in himself and how much he believed in his teammates, his coaching staff. Like, that's a team. That's a team.
You know, it's funny because last year, when your team was deciding whether or not to sign Nick Foles to a 2-year, $11 million contract that included $7 million guaranteed, the actual conversation that occurred between Jeffrey Lurie and the general manager, Howie Roseman, was this. Basically, is that a lot of money? Yes. Do we feel like we should spend that amount of money and be in a position where this guy would be able to win us one game? Do we think for $11 million, Nick Foles could win us one game? And as it turned out, he was able to help win the Eagles three games. But he played on the big stage about as well as could be expected. He out-dueled the other quarterback, the greatest quarterback who's ever played in my mind. And it came back to the conversation that Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman had last March when figuring out whether to pay that money. Could he win one game? And the answer now, as we all know, is a resounding yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
And you bring up Absolutely. The other parts, Brian. I think people forget that because every year it's a war of attrition in the NFL, and teams lose a lot of players to injuries, and most teams are unable to overcome that. The Eagles this year lost Carson Wentz, arguably the MVP of the league, a Pro Bowl left tackle, Jason Peters, Jordan Hicks at linebacker, John Maragos from special teams. Who am I missing? I know I'm missing more. There are more guys that I'm missing, right? The kicker, Caleb Sturgis.
Yeah. Sturgis, yes.
They replaced him early in the year with Jake Elliott, who came on and played great. And so, to me, what this season proves is that injuries should not be relied on as much as an excuse. The Eagles raised the bar for those other teams in the future.
Let me tell you what, also, to me, it speaks volumes of. It's what you pour into those other guys. See, when you look at Carson Wentz and you look at Nick Foles as just another guy, then you won't pour into the right resources into Nick to make sure that he has everything that he needs, that just in case anything happens, that he's ready to play. And so, you know, I think that that's another thing that, you know, this organization has done a much better job of and has done some things that has hopefully set us apart for years to come. And what we do for everybody, not just the so-called superstars, not just for the so-called, you know, best players on the football team. Like, everybody is getting poured into on a grand scale by a lot of different resources. And I think that that's something that, again, that allows us to be a team that the guy that steps in is more than ready to perform. He may not be the exact, you know, equal of the player that he's stepping in for, but that player, because of what we believe in our scouts and those individuals that are going out bringing in the free agents, that individual has enough in him that his best will be good enough for us to win games going forward. It may not be the best of the guy that was in front of him, but his best still is able to allow us to win.
How was your celebration Sunday night? Because I know the team had a big party. I don't know whether you went to that or not. But when your team wins the Super Bowl on the same weekend that you get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, how do you celebrate Sunday night, all this joy and all these blessings that have been thrust upon you in such a short period of time?
This just enjoying it with my beautiful wife Connie. You know, my kids, they obviously had to go on and get some rest, but you know, we just went in and, you know, we just soaked it all in. We sat kind of in the back and, you know, watching all the young cats up there dancing on stage and, you know, looking at Jeff, you know, smiling and from ear to ear the whole time and how much joy he had. I was so happy for him.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Lurie, just how strenuous of a time period this has been, you know, the ups and downs of owning a football team. I can only imagine, but then the losses over and over again being so close and to finally get this, to finally win it. And then it's the other thing of not just winning it, but winning it in the fashion that we did against the team that we won against.
Yeah.
And then the prospects of going forward, what we have now built in order to hopefully continue to come back and have that success. But I enjoyed that with my beautiful wife, if I can answer that question in one sentence.
Did the win lessen the sting from your Super Bowl loss in 2004 to the Patriots at all?
Yes, it did. I mean, you'll never take away the pain that you have when you're a competitor of losing. That'll always be there. But for me, again, being able to be a part of helping these young men to reach this plateau and to increase that the organization, not just these young men, but the organization in so many different areas, I'm blessed to have conversations with. To help in whatever small way I could to help this team win a Super Bowl, and not just this team. I don't get me twisted. It's not about just about this team. It's about the city of Philadelphia, man. Like, you know, I woke up and I tweeted something like, "Repeat after me: the Philadelphia Eagles are world champions." The world champions. It's still can't believe it. Like, we are world champions. Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, the fans of Philadelphia, who people all love to come down on, are world champions. Oh, man. Outstanding.
And I was going to ask you that. You played for that team from 1996 to 2008. How do you put into words what a victory and a run like this means to one city?
Wow. First, I guess, first word is relief. Relief. Like all those years of pent-up frustration, all those years of coming close, all those years of almost kind of sort of right at the brink of having success, and then, you know, we would come up short. The ride was fun. We always get to those, just like for the times that I was here, those NFC championship games, every year, they come up short. Super Bowl, we came up short. And to get to that pinnacle. And then, not only that, Adam, but there was a different feeling when we went into this game. Yes, we were playing the Patriots, but I didn't come across too many so-called negative Eagle fans. There was no negativity. It was very little, if there was any. Like, there was a belief in this city that this team was going to be able to do what it is that we started out thinking we could do. Now, not the whole city in the beginning of the year, but this team did. But the city began to catch the steam of what this engine was doing, this train was doing as we were moving during the season. So they began to believe. And then to have that city now believe that we were going to beat the Patriots and then us to finally do it, that sense of relief. And now they can celebrate. They can exhale and celebrate. And I've seen pictures of people going to their loved ones' graves, putting, you know, Super Bowl banners on top of the tombstones. You know, that's how deep this thing runs. And that's what people don't understand about this fan base. This is a fan base that loves hard, loves strong, and they finally get their championship.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because this morning I had a Jets fan text me a picture. It's a tombstone in Philadelphia for a man named Joseph Edward Jr., who was born on January 15, 1919, and died January 2nd, 2017. And somebody put a Philadelphia Daily News with the headline, "One for the Ages," on that plot, that gravestone, for that man to see. And this person, who's a Jets fan, said, "This better not be me." But when you talk about those newspapers and what it means to all these people, and the people who didn't get to see it, and the people who feel like they're experiencing it for the people who didn't experience it, it's hard to really put into words how much it means to so many people.
And that's the thing that it's hard for us to truly grasp. If you ever get a chance to to sometimes drive around, you know, the city of Philadelphia. There's certain parts of Philadelphia that you don't even know exist. So in those areas, those people love the Philadelphia Eagles. They bleed and cry for the Philadelphia Eagles. And so for those individuals to now who have long the generations have passed down specific traditions, a certain thing, think about it, there's certain, you plan your day around Sunday. They plan their week around the Philadelphia Eagles or when they play games. And certain traditions they have that have been passed down from their grandfather to their father and now to their children. So those traditions, man, those traditions, are they mean something to that family. Like, they won't break them. Some people get so angry that they have to do other things. They won't do other things during that time period because they know the tradition has been set in stone and it cannot be changed. So for the Eagles to finally win a championship, to kind of validate the fact that they sacrificed so much time in buying those chicken wings and you know, buying those cases, whatever they're going to bring to have that celebration, that it finally validated it. And so they can now look back and really have a good time of communion kind of with those who've gone on. Those individuals who started the tradition, now they can sit down and pray and think how much they are enjoying that, looking down upon them here on earth. That's a powerful image.
What was the flight home like? Anything that stands out in your mind? Because I will say this to you, but I remember Mr. Bolin in Denver. He always said to me, I always would ask him, hey, when do I get to fly on the Broncos team plane when I cover the team? Because he used to fly some of the TV reporters from the local station. And I would never get to go because I was a newspaper reporter. He said, if we ever win the Super Bowl, you come home in the team plane. And I went home. And I'll never forget, I sat up front with him in the Vince Lombardi trophy. And it's, to this day, I could still see him beaming over that Vince Lombardi trophy, the first he ever brought to Denver. What stands out to you about your flight home back to Philadelphia?
Well, I didn't get a chance to fly with the team home because I had to go the next morning to get fitted for my ring and for my jacket.
Rough life.
So I had to get up the next morning, very early the next morning, to begin the orientation for that process. the thought of what that even felt like to do that. But I can only imagine what those players were feeling like to be riding home with that Lombardi trophy, and I'm pretty sure they were treating it like a baby up passing.
But I love that. Just think about this. If I told you, I don't know, a year ago, you're going to miss the Eagles team charter home from their Super Bowl victory because you got to get fitted for your jacket and Hall of Fame ring.
Man, you know what? I wouldn't have been angry. I wouldn't have been angry about it. Even though I know there's a lot of joy and conversations and smiles and hugs I missed on that plane right home. But again, for me to be able to do that, fitted for that jacket, to sit down, and that's the other thing, Adam, to sit down with the class members that I'm in there with, like guys that I respect, like, you know, talking about Ray Lewis, you're talking about Randy Moss, you're talking about Brian Urlacher, being able to sit down and have a couple of interviews with them, you know, those guys that you, like, truly respected in the game.
Yeah.
Tremendous, tremendous.
That's a great class. It's a great class, Brian. Great class. My last question for you, the Eagles have a bunch of players signed through at least the year 2020. Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, Fletcher Cox, Vinny Curry, Timmy Jernigan, Derek Barnett, Malcolm Jenkins, Rodney McLeod. The roster is set up for an extended period of prosperity. How feasible is it that the Eagles could actually win more Super Bowls, Brian?
It's definitely feasible. The thing that we have to always remember is how we got here. The hard work, the grinding, the pain, you know, in getting here. Not the pain from losing, but the pain in work, hard work. And so as long as we don't forget how we got here, as long as we don't forget what it took to get this team to the place that it is right now, like, you know, there's – Jim Johnson used to always tell us that you never really stay the same. You're either going to get worse or you're going to get better. So we always have to have a mindset of, okay, so what do we do during this off season to allow ourselves to be better this year? What do we need to tweak? Is there anything that we need to look into to add to what we're doing? And those are the conversations that we'll have because I believe we've done a good job of that as an organization, of sharing information and being able to put the right things in front of the players that we do bring in. First of all, getting the right guys to, with the right mentality to be here in Philadelphia, and then putting the right things around them and in them to allow them to perform their very best throughout the duration of the season. So, like I said earlier, I believe that, you know, we have the things in place to be able to continue to persevere and push through as long as we continue to, once again, remember how we got here, stay humble in it, and continue to work and grind.
Brian, congratulations on the ring, the jacket, the Super Bowl ring, the whole...
Two rings, wow.
Two rings in one weekend!
Two rings. I got fitted for the ring the other day, or yesterday, excuse me. Unbelievable.
So just take that ring size and give it to Mr. Lurie and say, this is my size for the Super Bowl ring, too.
I'm going to have to put it on a different finger. I'm going to have to put it on a different finger, though. Both of them on the same hand.
That's a lot of jewelry, my friend. A lot of jewelry.
It's a blessing, brother. It's an absolute blessing. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for joining us today, Brian. Really appreciate the time. Congratulations on everything. And we will see you in Canton this summer, if not before.
Indeed, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. So there he is, the Eagles' 9-time Pro Bowl selection, an executive of football operations for player development, and class of 2018 Hall of Fame member, Brian Dawkins. And now, looking back at his past and the people who shaped his life, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie.
Someone told me that when Carson Wentz went down with that torn ACL and LCL, that you cried.
Well, I didn't. Did somebody say that? You know, I cried inside. I was at the Rams game. We were winning it. Carson had just playing great. I got word from Howie that was probably a torn ACL. I knew we had a very good quarterback in Nick Foles, but I thought, wow, you know, here we are. Best team in the NFL potentially with an unbelievably good starting quarterback. And in, you know, one play, it changes. So, you know, I want to win so badly for our fans and everybody in the organization, and it's like there's a blow there. And so, yeah, cried inside, but I think, you know, we're all pretty resilient people here.
How much of a gut punch was that for your entire city?
It was a huge gut punch. It was huge. You know, I think only a few of us realized we had a really good other quarterback, but even then, you're talking about a player who, you know, may be the best young quarterback in football, potentially was the MVP of the league, and you have to replace that. And, you know, no matter how good your other quarterback is, that's pretty remarkable. So it's pretty big.
What have you thought of the other quarterback?
Nick Foles. I mean, we've known Nick for a long time, you know, ever since we drafted him. There's no bigger fan of Nick than myself. And ever since he's been drafted, you know, he's been doubted, and all he does is win and performs really well. The bigger the game, the better he performs. And I think in the last 23 games, we've had Nick as our starter and finished the game. We're 18-5. He's, you know, his postseason quarterback rating is off the charts. Whatever it is, he's got it. Nick has it, and he's a big-time player who... You know, we discounted his 2 years at the Rams. Honestly, we just didn't think he was surrounded well at that time with their roster and offensive line. And it didn't mean a lot to us that, you know, he suffered those 2 years.
Did you grow up rooting for the Patriots?
Oh, I was an obsessed Patriots fan growing up, as I was for all the Boston sports teams. You know, just an obsessed Patriots fan, and went to the very first AFL game ever at Nickerson Field. Pats Broncos was the very first AFL game ever. And, you know, was in love with professional football in those days, and the Pats were my team. Not anymore.
How long did they remain your team for?
Until I bought the Eagles. Until
in 1994?
Yeah.
And what is it like for you to look across the field on Sunday and see your team going up against the team that you were obsessed with?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When my obsession for the Eagles dwarfs my childhood obsession with the Patriots. It's just at a whole other level.
How close did you come to buying the New England Patriots at one time?
Well, pretty close, pretty close. You know, I think it came down to a few bidders. And, you know, I think the advantage Bob Kraft had was he had ownership of 50% of the stadium. So he had more leverage in the deal making to gain control of the team. And, You know, I've known Bob a long time, and that's the way that went.
Were you the two finalists for that?
I don't know. I don't really know. You know, there could have been a few others. I don't think we know all the bidders often, but yeah, I was serious about it, and but quickly was, you know, very interested in, and loved the idea when the Eagles became available. It was like, wow.
But you said you were close to buying the Patriots.
Yeah.
How do we put into words how close you were to buying that team?
I can't really say. I mean, you'd have to ask the seller. You know, pretty close.
And back in 1994, you bought the Philadelphia Eagles for $185 million.
Yeah.
Have you ever made a better investment in your entire life?
Never. But I do remember when I made the investment that I think it was the front page of the Wall Street Journal said this was the dumbest investment of the year. It was an emotional investment, had no basis in reality. And the crazy thing is I thought they were right.
Really? Why is
that? Yeah, because I just, you know, it was probably my first real big investment of that magnitude. And I was leveraging a lot. And, you know, it was a big risk. And I thought, geez, they've really evaluated this maybe more than I have. I thought I had. But, you know, I had hopes that the sport was so popular and emerging as an incredible asset for television that I just thought it can't go down. It's only going to go up. But they, you know, Wall Street Journal seemed to know better. And at that time, they thought it was a very dumb investment.
After you made that dumb investment,
yeah,
what was the most concerning you were that it might have been a very dumb investment?
Well, I walked in the first day, I think, and met all the employees. And it was so depressing that an NFL team would be housed in a windowless facility with rats running around and really just sort of a, is this the professional football team that's part of the NFL? And I just paid the most ever for this team. And here we are in this veteran stadium offices where the employees were on the fourth floor, the first floor. They're all split up. You couldn't talk to everybody at the same time. And rats are running around. And I'm thinking, wow, this was pretty dumb.
How did it change?
Well, you know, it took some time. One of the things I realized was if you want to be a first-class organization, you have to have great facilities. So you have to bring in first great people, and that's what we did. But we also had to really work on having great practice facilities, a great new stadium, and those were the priorities. Now, we were able to at least be in championship games in Veterans Stadium. So I felt proud of the fact that even with awful facilities and the fact that free agents didn't want to come to us, we were still successful, and that meant a lot.
Jeffrey, back when you bought that team for $185 million, could you ever imagine the day would come when that franchise would be worth some $2.5 billion?
Yeah, you know, I think of it occasionally, Adam, but I think, you know, I bought it because I love the sport. I love what a sports team can do for a city. I thought it was a good business investment, but what I never kind of correlate is just because it's really successful, it doesn't make me a better person. It doesn't make me a more successful person. I'm just not into that kind of value system. You know, I look in the mirror every day and I have to judge myself. Am I a good person? Am I treating others well? Those are the kind of things that matter. I'm not selling the team. It doesn't matter that it's worth $2.5 billion. And it is, you know, it's an incredible situation to think about it, but it doesn't make me any better because of it. That's what I'm saying.
When you judge yourself in the mirror each day, what is the verdict?
The verdict is I try hard. You know, I try hard to be a good person who remains humble through all success. And we've had a lot of success, and I know financially it's very successful that way. But just because we may have a really good young football team, just because we have a MVP caliber young quarterback, just because Nick Foles is playing very well, that doesn't make me a better person. I don't get fooled into thinking because we have assembled a very good football team that makes me any better than anybody else. You know, I'm the same as the janitor working in our building who works his ass off. I try to work my ass off to try to make the football team value the right things and be successful. But, you know, that's kind of what it is.
What would your father, Maury Lurie, say if you could be here?
I think he would be much more proud of the fact that I'm a decent person. I think that's all that really would matter to him. He was a fanatic. He taught me the game of football. The last football game I ever got to watch with my dad was the overtime game between the Colts and the Giants.
In 1958.
Yeah, and that game set off my love affair with this sport. I mean, I just couldn't believe how wonderful and great it was. He was rooting for his hometown Giants, where he grew up in Greater New York. I was rooting for the Colts for some reason. I liked their uniforms better, and I liked Johnny Unitas. But, you know, his value system to me as a kid was always about how you are as a person. It's not about what you achieve in material things. And he'd be really proud, I think, that that the way I operate the franchise is trying to be as fan-friendly and player-friendly as possible. Have to make tough decisions all the time. But it's with some humanity. It's with a humbleness, I hope. And that's where I'm the most critical, because if I ever go through a day where I feel I wasn't that way, I'm very self-critical.
Yet you only had your father for 9 years of your life.
Yeah.
He made that much of an impact on you in those 9 years, huh?
He did. I mean, we shared love of sports together, but he was a very hands-on dad. We spent so much time playing baseball together and doing things, and just he was a person who always valued how you are as a person, and that came through even those 9 years. I mean, it was just some things just emanate, and he emanated as someone who always looked out for those less fortunate. He always looked for the vulnerable, the person that is the least filled with material things is really the person you need to look out for. They're the most vulnerable, and what can you do to help them? And he was always that way, whether it was a worker working for him in the restaurants that he managed, or within our family and my brother who's autistic. That was his biggest concern.
I can't even imagine. I have a 9-year-old daughter. I can't imagine leaving the earth now at this point and what I would miss out on with her and what you missed out on with him.
You know, it's well said, Adam, because actually my pain is much more what he missed out on than what I missed out on. I know what I missed out on. I can still live and enjoy so much. He missed out on the growing of his three kids, and, you know, he had a very loving wife, my mom, and missed out on all that took place after those 9 years. So I feel terrible that's where the real sadness comes into what he lost.
Is the day that you found out that he had passed away from kidney cancer, is that as vivid a day as you have as a little boy?
Oh, my God. I just almost know it minute by minute, hour by hour, coming home from school. And, in those days, they probably didn't talk to you a lot about someone who had terminal cancer, and that's what he had. And I thought he had a broken leg or a hip problem that occurred on a golf course, and I just had no idea whatsoever. So I think it's probably why I keep him with me so close every week, every year, every day, every year. I mean, it's like he's on this journey with me. I know that. And so is my mom, who's been unbelievable.
When your dad passed away,
yeah,
what did he leave you with in terms of your love of sports?
You know, I think it just happened because I needed an escape so badly. It seemed at times so gloomy, and sports was my outlet. And whether it was football, baseball, basketball, hockey, I would obsess every day over the teams that I rooted for, and even played like Strat-O-Matic baseball and became pretty obsessed with that. Sports became my outlet, and I continued that love till this day. I mean, it's just it's wonderful and has so much value, and it just in my life, looking back, it probably saved me.
Saved you? Why do you say that?
Well, I think, you know, it's just I had such joy from it that, you know, if I didn't have that, it would just sort of look out and, you know, kind of, where's my dad? What can I do about my brother? And it would have been frustrating. And sports was a chance to sort of have a lot of exhilarating moments. And I celebrate an awful lot of championships being a Celtics fan. I mean, I was probably at every celebration. I probably celebrate on the court 8-9 times. I mean, we're talking, you know, yearly. And I just, those were moments where I just, sports enveloped me and I enveloped it.
Life deals us a lot of sadness.
Yeah.
And it makes you appreciate those moments of sheer happiness, like a Celtics championship, like a championship that you're playing for right now.
Exactly. No, that's, you want to win so bad, and you know what it means to the fan, because I'm a fan, and you know what it means in their lives. So it makes so many of their lives better and more fulfilled if you can deliver a championship to a championship-starved city like Philly.
How did your father, losing him at 9, set a standard for you that you still adhere to this day?
He used to always talk to me about how you treat your mother, how you treat your friends, how you treat people. I always remember one time I was coming back from Sunday school, and for some reason he's driving the car, and he turns to me and says, "Jeffrey, don't you ever be a bully." And I'm saying, "Wow, what did I do that might have been that? Maybe I was talking in a condescending way about somebody we knew. I don't know what it was, but it was like, wow, you just don't go there, and you don't become a bully." And I try to incorporate that every day, because bullied, by the nature of being a bully, you're taking advantage of more vulnerable people. And I think it's the opposite. You got to reach out and find what you can do to offer yourself to those that are suffering the most, and the opposite of being a bully.
When was the last time you had your mother, your brother, I would assume your children, your two children?
Yes, of course.
All at one game at one time. Has it happened recently?
It has not happened recently, because my mom has not been traveling much. I know we were all together for the last Super Bowl in Jacksonville against the Patriots, and we've had some since, but I just don't remember. It's been a few years since she's gone to a game, because she just doesn't travel much.
What do you remember about the last Super Bowl against New England?
Just, missed opportunities. That's what I remember. We probably played very well early on, but we couldn't build a big enough lead because we just didn't play well in the red zone, I remember. And there's little things you do remember, but it's frustrating. Looking back, I just didn't think we played our best game, and lost by 3 points, and that's the way it went.
How long does something like that stay with you?
Oh, forever. Forever. It doesn't get erased. I have games where we were playing with our second quarterback in the playoffs a few years ago against New Orleans, and Jeff Garcia was our quarterback. And we were about to win and go to the NFC Championship, I think, for the 5th time in 6 years. And I was so proud of that, excited. It's rare to be able to pull that off. And one swing pass, lost yardage, had to kick a field goal instead of getting a touchdown. New Orleans comes back and kicks a field goal to win the game, and we lost our chance. So that will never be something I lose, but you try to cherish all the great moments, too, and That's why it's an obsession to winning it all.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Adam, how interesting was that?
Yeah.
With Jeffrey Lurie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And a lot of people didn't know that he was almost the owner of the Patriots. That's incredibly interesting.
I mean, you heard his words. He came, in his mind, very close. And I asked him, how close? And it's hard to quantify a business deal that big and that significant. But he certainly sounded like he really thought he wanted to buy the Patriots. And I'll tell you this too, Josh. I really believe that the Patriots were the model for the Eagles. And Jeffrey Lurie always wanted his franchise to be run the way that the Patriots have run their franchise. And I think the Eagles have done that. I think they've succeeded. They've signed these players long term. They've built new training facilities. They've built a new stadium. And I think that Philadelphia, the Eagles, are sort of like the Patriots Northeast to a certain extent. I really do.
Absolutely. And now that you bring that up, let's get to our first voicemail, which talks about maybe a changing of the guard when it comes to football dynasties.
Joseph Torres, and my question is, what's your take on the Super Bowl? Do you think that the Patriots are dethroned and the dynasty is over? And do you think that there's a new dynasty with the Eagles?
Well, I'll say this, Joseph. The dynasty is not over, and it won't be over until Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are gone. Once one of them leaves, I think you can say the dynasty's over at that point in time. But as long as they have those two men, the dynasty is intact. Now, I will also say that the dynasty's best days are behind it. Okay, they still could win again because they're that formidable with those two men and some of the surrounding cast. But they're on the other side of the mountain now, that dynasty. They don't have much time left. And we'll see what kind of run they can make next year. There's not a lot there. As for the Eagles, you heard us talk to Brian Dawkins, who's around the team all the time, and his title as the executive of football operations for player development. And you heard the list of players that the Eagles have under contract through and beyond the 2020 season. So we're talking about the 18, 19, 20, the next three seasons, this team is set up to succeed. And it's set up to succeed beyond that because it has Carson Wentz. And as long as you've got the quarterback in place, then you're always going to have a chance to surround him with talent. And I think the Eagles are benefiting from the fact that Carson Wentz is on that rookie contract. Any team that hits on a young rookie quarterback is doubly blessed. Number one, they solve what is the most important position in all of sports. And number two, they don't have to pay him what the Lions are paying Matthew Stafford or what the Packers are about to pay Aaron Rodgers or what some team is going to pay Kirk Cousins. They can pay a rookie quarterback $5, $6, $7 million a year, and it leaves you so much more money to spread around to the rest of the roster. That's why it's been so important for the Dallas Cowboys to take advantage of Dak Prescott finishing his second season while they can, because they can take the money that they would be spending at quarterback and spend it elsewhere. The Eagles are in that position for the next 3 years with Carson Wentz. And then, once they have to give Wentz the big money, which they will at some point in time, then the rest of the roster takes a hit. But when you hit on a young quarterback like Philadelphia has, like Dallas has, like some of these teams have, it is imperative that you take advantage of it. The Eagles have taken advantage of it in 2018, and they are set up to do it again in the 18th season, the 19th season, the 20 season, and beyond.
Adam, you started that answer by discussing the Patriots dynasty and the fact that it won't be over until Belichick or Brady leaves.
Yep.
That brings us to this question.
Hey, Adam, this is Jeff from Mooresville in Janana. And I was just wondering, what's all this chatter about Bill Belichick maybe hanging it up after the season? And if you could elaborate on some of those rumors.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the question, Jeff. And I would say this, that there are a lot of people who know that Bill is going to be 66 years old next season. And if you go back and look at it, many of the coaching greats in the game were gone by the time they turned 66. They didn't make it that long. Most people don't. But I think that's what separates Bill Belichick, is his passion and enthusiasm for the game. I believe it's as strong now as it has ever been. He's a student of the game, a historian of the game, knowledgeable about the game. And at some point, he may transition out of New England or out of coaching. That's going to be his choice and his right. It doesn't sound like it's happening for the 2018 season. And I do believe he's got multiple years left in his contract in New England. I do believe he's the Patriots' property. We don't know the exact number of years. I think for at least 2 years, at least two more years. So it's not like he can go coach the Giants like people were talking about, or another franchise, without them having to trade for him. And is the team going to trade at that point for a 66 or a 67 or 68-year-old coach? I don't know that they would give up what it takes. So I know people have been speculating on his future. Look, he's 66. Tom Brady's going to be 41 next season. And we're talking about probably the greatest coach who's ever coached and the greatest quarterback who's ever quarterbacked. And so there's going to be a fascination and a storyline and a question that's asked all the time about how much longer each one of them is going to participate in their respective craft. How much longer can Tom Brady beat Father Time and throw for over 500 yards, no interceptions, three touchdowns in a Super Bowl game? My guess is it's hard to imagine Bill Belichick doing anything else other than coaching. I think one day he could run a franchise if that's what he wanted to do. That wouldn't shock me. But I don't think he's done coaching at this time just yet. I think he's back in 2018. And then I think when you get to the point where Bill is in his career or Tom is in his career, it does become a year-to-year decision. And because it becomes a year-to-year decision, you're going to hear people discussing it, speculating on it. People throw things out. And those questions aren't going to go away, but I believe that both men are back next season. At least that's what they've said.
Fair enough. So that explains the future of Bill Belichick, but what about the future of Nick Foles?
Adam, my name is Philip, San Antonio, Texas. Adam, do you think the Jacksonville Jaguars should give up a first-round pick for Nick Foles?
Philip, I love this. I love this because now we are such a reactionary society. 2 weeks ago, people are saying the Eagles can't win the Super Bowl because of Nick Foles. And now we got the Jacksonville Jaguars trading a one for Nick Foles. So which one is it? It's probably somewhere between those two scenarios. Look, I think here's the deal. The Eagles have him under contract for another year. And they don't know when Carson Wentz is going to make it back next season. He might not be back for the opening game. He's coming off the torn ACL, the torn LCL. So, to me, I don't think another team would give up a first-round pick for Nick Foles. I just don't see that happening. So, if they're not giving up a one, let's just say the Jaguars went to the Eagles tomorrow and said, we'll give you a two. Is it worth it to the Eagles to go trade Foles for a two when they might need him to open the season and defend their Super Bowl title? I don't think it is. And if and when he leaves after next season and goes somewhere else to sign, then they might get a compensatory draft pick, a compensatory third if he's paid enough. So would you rather get a two for the 2019 draft or a three in the 2020 draft and have Nick Foles for an extra year when Carson Wentz is coming off a knee injury? So I know people are getting carried away with this question. I think it's pretty simple. I think Carson Wentz is their starting quarterback when he's healthy. I think they hold on to Nick Foles because his value is too great. We saw what he could do. And I think, look, if they feel like Carson Wentz is back for the opener, doing great, and they want to trade Nick Foles right before the trade deadline like the Niners did, maybe you try to do that. But I just think that he's got value. The Eagles recognize that. They believe in him. And I think he's probably more valued in Philadelphia than he is anywhere else.
Adam, you said it's a reactionary league. It's also a copycat league.
Hey, Adam, this is Eric. Do you think the run-pass option is going to be the next big thing in this league? I mean, you saw Nick Foles, and it seemed like he became a great quarterback because of it. And I just want to see if other teams maybe might try to replicate that. Is that going to be like the new Wildcat of 2018?
Well, thanks for the question, Eric. What I would say to that is, you know, listen, I think we've seen the RPOs in college, and I don't think any team is just going to take that offense. And the Eagles thought of this a couple of weeks into the postseason. I think that teams, they all study what the winning teams do. It's the first thing everybody does. They break down the tape. Do I think we're going to see some of that with other teams? Yeah. I think there will be other teams that run certain plays like that. But I still think teams are going to stick within their systems. Now, could they incorporate certain RPO options at that point? Yeah, that could happen, Eric. But again, I don't think it's some, you know, fad sweeping across the league like everybody's getting away from the wing T to go run the RPOs.
Fair enough. Let's get away from the Super Bowl theme for this last voicemail.
Hey guys, love the podcast. My name is Jake, and my Ask Adam question is, do you think Marshawn Lynch will be back with the Raiders next season with head coach John Gruden?
Jake, it's a great question. It's a tough question. And I think the fact that it's a question is news enough, right? I think we all wonder, you know, does John Gruden want to commit to Marshawn Lynch? Does he feel like the team needs more speed and athleticism at that spot? And I'll be honest with you, Jake, I just don't know the answer right now. I just don't know. And here's the other thing about it. John Gruden is a very private and secretive man. Marshawn Lynch is incredibly unpredictable. So we could give you an answer right now, and it might be totally something different that occurs at the start of the league year on March 14th. My guess, just a guess, is that the Raiders will look to see what other running backs they could add. They will look to see if they need the cap space. If they can find a running back that's an upgrade over Marshawn Lynch, maybe they would consider moving on. But I think in a perfect world, they do have a spot for him there in Oakland. They recognize his popularity, what he brings to the team, the aura. So it's the kind of thing to me that could go either way, I would guess. Let's say he's back, but they're going to look around at the running back position to upgrade it. Is that fair?
Fair enough. And Adam, what good are you? If you can't predict Marshawn Lynch's future, what do we even have you here for?
Yeah, I know.
That
sorry,
guy,
Josh.
He's so predictable.
Well, Josh, I apologize to you and to Jake for not being more thorough and expansive in my answer and not being, as Malcolm Butler said, Miss Cleo.
There you go.
And be able to tell the future.
There you go. Well, hey, the football season is officially over, but we are not done here, and neither are you. So keep calling us. Leave your voicemail for Ask Adam. Make sure you leave your name as well. The number 860-506-5779. Keep those questions coming all off season long.
And a thank you to my producer, Josh Macri. A thank you to the Eagles Hall of Fame safety and now executive of football operations for player development, Brian Dawkins, and the Eagles owner, Jeffrey Lurie. Are there any two people, Josh, that are any more happy than Brian Dawkins and Jeffrey Lurie. Well, I guess the entire city of Philadelphia.
The entire city of Philadelphia.
It's a great week to be an Eagles fan. Congratulations to Philadelphia. We'll be back in this spot next week on the next Adam Schefter podcast. And thank you all for listening.